Since the earliest movies, white actors have played Asians on screen.
Sakimi by name, interpreter by profession.
But in 1960, one woman changed the face of cinema.
How do you pronounce your name?
Juan.
And your first name?
Nancy.
I have never seen Chinese play the Chinese until Nancy.
Oh, yes, I remember.
Nancy was the personification of what was Hong Kong. Young, attractive, ambitious, clever.
She was so beautiful. I became her fan right away.
Nancy was a unique celebrity. There were no other Asian leading ladies.
Without any doubt at all, she was the very first Hong Kong movie star.
And starring lovely Nancy Kwan.
Nancy Kwan had seemingly conquered the Hollywood establishment. Movie-going audiences all over the world fell in love with this young Eurasian girl from Hong Kong.
Tony, Dean, Marlon. I give up.
It's Rock.
Rock who?
Rock, your husband.
Take your filthy hands off me.
It broke stereotypes, it broke myths. Asians could be funny. We could be American.
Yes, indeed.
Nancy Kwan's success had finally shattered the stereotypical image that Asian actors had struggled to overcome.
I remember sitting there at the premiere and people applauded.
But in her personal life,
you know, Bernie was her heart.
Took me in his arms and says, "You're gonna take care of my mother."
Forces beyond her control would forever change the world of Nancy Kwan.
I still miss him as much as the day he passed away. It hasn't changed.
You write him a letter of introduction?
How shall I address it?
To whom it may concern.
Good evening. My name is Jim Laurie, and that was just a preview of what you're going to be seeing this evening. And if they repair the microphone, I will continue to talk. I must say, when I was 12 years old in Worcester, Massachusetts, I'm one of the few, I will confess, who did not actually see the world of Susie Wong that autumn of 1960. However, my father used to collect Life magazines, and all of a sudden, I noticed on my father's desk two distinctive Life magazine covers. One was of a woman named France Nguyen, and the other was Nancy Kwan. And those images shaped my early life. 10 years later, I was in Hong Kong. But I remember those covers because France Nguyen had that sort of, she leaned backward in a very enticing way. And you had sort of a alluring, mysterious look wearing your Cheung Sam. And then I saw a TV show that you were on. It was called What's My Line? And it was a very serious anchor man named John Charles Daly who brought Nancy on. And she had to identify herself in writing while a panel was blindfolded to guess who she was. And all of a sudden, I saw the first woman I had ever seen write in Chinese calligraphy your name right on nationwide television on CBS. And that was my introduction to Asia. Well, 10 years later, I come to Asia. 50 years later, you're here. So everything comes around. But I do want to seriously thank all of those who made this event and Nancy's return to Hong Kong. First time since 2007, last time I saw you here, 2007. But I want to thank the many people that made this visit and this event possible. Special thanks to the new Consul General, Stephen Young, the U.S. Consul General, I should say, and Mr. Matthew Dolbo, do I have that right? Almost right, for assisting in this event. To, of course, Norbert Meisel, Nancy's husband, and to the gentleman who produced and directed the film, of which you will see some more excerpts a little bit later, the film as directed by Mr. Brian Jameson. Thank you, Brian, and thank all of you for coming. This, of course, Hong Kong is Nancy's home. I mean, I remember those. You did a lot of public service announcements when I first came to Hong Kong. You're on the TV all the time extolling the virtues of Hong Kong, and I always used to fixate on the only time I ever watched TVB, you know, when you were doing those public service announcements back in the day. In any event, without further ado, let me reintroduce to you a person who needs no introduction, of course, Nancy Kwan.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you, Jim, for the kind words. Before we start, I just want to say that a member of the FCC Club couldn't make it tonight because he said he was going to visit the real Suzy Wong in Wan Chai. Well, where should I start? Oh, our documentary that took 4 years to produce is finally completed. And it's going to be shown on Monday at the Convention Center, so I hope some of you can join us at 9:30 in the morning. So get up early and join us. What else? It took us 4 years to make, and Brian Jameson, the producer-director, sitting right down there. Thank you, Brian. He did a wonderful job, I must say. We shot in some wonderful locations in this documentary. Of course, Hong Kong, being back here. We came back when they had the performance of the Suzy Wong Ballet in Hong Kong. So we covered the ballet and intercut the ballet with the film that you will see. What else? Then we filmed in Cambodia at Angkor Wat because there's a section in the documentary about my son that he passed away. And it was a very difficult section because I'm a very private person. It's not something that I can talk about. So Brian and I thought it would be a good place, going to a place like Angkor Wat, which is so beautiful and spiritual, and at the same time of all the genocide that's taken place in Cambodia, this contrast there, that I was able to speak about this incident. I'm surprised myself that I could actually talk about it. Going back to the documentary, when Brian Jameson first approached me to do this documentary on my life, I said to him, well, why do you want to do a documentary on my life? I mean, my life is not that interesting. And he said, I beg to differ. And so then we started to shoot the documentary. Are there any questions? I mean, do you want to do a Q&A? Or do you want to see the second part of the film? What do you think, Jim?
Did you want to talk about your childhood
years
first?
Or okay. All right. Okay. I wanted to share with you, because being back in Hong Kong, every time I come back, Hong Kong has changed again. And I mean, it's constantly changing. And the other day, I was in Jim Sa Jiu looking for Moody Road, a street that I've known since childhood. And I couldn't find it. I could not find Moody Road. Very frustrating. So that's why I would like to share this with you of my childhood days in a very different Hong Kong. For those of you who don't know or have perhaps forgotten, Hong Kong means fragrant harbor in Chinese. The words invoke mystery and intrigue. Well, not quite. The bottom line is, show me the money. Money makes Hong Kong go round. Hong Kong is unique. It was born to the Chinese, leased by the British, and raised by the refugees, and now returned to the motherland. When I was growing up, Hong Kong was a small, laid-back seaport. We lived in a big white house designed by my father on Homington Hill. Surrounded by miles of open space, the pine-covered hill was our favorite playground. After school, we used to play ball in the street. In those days, there were hardly any traffic. I attended Maryknoll Common School. I just met someone who was from Maryknoll in Kowloon Tong. I remember I wanted to become a nun for the longest time. And whenever I asked my father about it, he'll say, well, wait till you get older. Just wait. And 10 years later, much to everyone's surprise, including myself, I was playing a prostitute from Hong Kong in my first film, The World of Susie Wong with William Holden. There's more. Talk about changes. They came overnight. One afternoon, clad in the pajama popular in those days, I strolled down the hill to visit friends. The noise hit me first. I couldn't believe my eyes. People filled the street, and I couldn't understand a word they were saying. My friends explained that they were refugees from China. There were entire families sitting around, cooking, sleeping in cardboard boxes, and children running everywhere. I mean, it was extraordinary. Later, I discovered most were from Shanghai, speaking their own particular dialect. One family had moved under the stairwell in my friend's building. There were two girls our age, 8 and 10, that we befriended. We would communicate in sign language, Cantonese, Shanghainese, and English, doing whatever we could to help. I gave them comic books from home. It was funny, they would sell, swap, and even rent them. Every day there would be 4 or 5 kids and grown-ups sitting on wooden benches reading comic books. The kids' parents loved American cigarettes. My father's brand was Lucky Strikes. Eventually I got caught stealing them. I remembered confessing to my armor that I wasn't smoking. They were there for my refugee friends. We also supplied them with canned goods and chocolates for the girls. Everyone bought it for anything. Survival was their goal. Finally, this particular family moved into a one-room apartment, which they would share with more relatives from China. The circle had begun. The last time I was in Hong Kong, I got lost in Tsim Sha Tsui, unable to locate Moody Road, a street I've known since my childhood. Just in case the one country, two system doesn't work out, I'd like to offer a tourism promotional campaign. Ted Thomas, where are you? Listen up. Come visit Hong Kong, the spiritual center of Asia. Airfare, hotel, meals, and optional meditation sessions included. Bottled water free, but spiritual enlightenment not guaranteed. Thank you very much.
I think before we continue and we get into questionnaire, Q&A time, I'd like to play one more clip. This is the 4-minute clip from the documentary, To Whom It May Concern, Ka Shen's Journey. And for those who are available on Monday, there will be a full showing of the documentary at Theater One at the Hong Kong Convention Center. Because of space limitations, it might be good to leave your business card perhaps over in the bar there, if you wish to attend, it's 9:15 in the morning on Monday, Theater One, Hong Kong Convention Center, for the full film. But before we continue with the live Nancy Kwan, perhaps let's look at one more clip from the documentary.
I was lucky. I saw Nancy Kwan's World of Suze Wan and then Flower Drum Song. I really liked those two. She was so beautiful. I became her fan right away. It was a part of history. They were the pioneers. They really had a dream and they came and they managed to put early images on the map.
When I draw a face, I remember it. Sure looked like it.
Nancy was the personification of what was Hong Kong, young, attractive, ambitious, clever, and that it was without any doubt at all, she was the very first Hong Kong movie star. Someone said she was the stuff of our tortured adolescent dreams.
I've asked them to start it over again so we get it from the very beginning.
I was lucky because I saw Nancy Kwan's World of Suze Wan and then Flower Drum Song. I really liked those two. She was so beautiful. I became her fan right away. It was a part of history. They were the pioneers. They really had a dream and they came and they managed to put the early images on the map.
When I draw a face, I remember it.
Sure looks like you.
To Americans, all Chinese look alike, for goodness sake. That's not me. My name's Suze Wan. I never seen you before. Leave us alone, please.
No talk, huh?
Basically, Nancy was the personification of what was Hong Kong. Young, attractive, ambitious, clever. And that it was without any doubt at all. She was the very first Hong Kong movie star. Someone said she was the stuff of our tortured adolescent dreams.
Nancy Kwan's performance in Flower Drum Song to me was really breaking the glass ceiling. Here you had a young, beautiful Asian American woman on the silver screen singing and dancing. Not the nice little polite Asian girl as Americans were used to seeing on the screen, but here's a sassy girl. Here's a girl who likes to have fun. Here's a girl who is the all-American girl. And you know what? It's an Asian girl. It's Nancy Kwan, and she played it perfectly.
Fan Tan Fanny was leaving her man. Fan Tan Fanny kept waving her fan. Said goodbye, Danny, you two time and Dan. Some other man loves your little Fanny. Bye-bye. Icebox you'll find in a can. Some leftovers of Moo Goo Guy Pan. Fan Tan Fanny has found a new guy. His name is Manny. He's good for Fanny. So goodbye, Danny. Goodbye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Nancy was a unique celebrity in her time. There were no other Asian leading ladies.
She's like a candle of warm love around her motherhood. It was very important to her, very, very important. And as an actress, I think one word really describes it, professional, very professional.
They say education is good.
I've heard that.
Me personally,
I hope you go with April. I can always use a good dishwasher.
She is absolutely timeless. She's just as beautiful. You know, we all age, but she's just as beautiful as in the films.
The film debuted, I believe, in San. Where did?
About 2 weeks.
2 weeks ago.
Is this on?
Now it is.
Yeah, about 2 weeks ago, we were in San Jose at the Cinequest Film Festival, and they played for 2 weekends, no, 2 days actually, in Saturday and Sunday. We had a very good audience, very good attendance, and it was well received. So. We're happy
and
about it.
And then it plays here and then in Singapore, I understand, next month.
Yes, it's going to be in the Singapore Film Festival
Singapore
next month.
Yes. Film Festival. Yes. Okay, great. Like to open it up to questions for Nancy, if you would be so kind as to introduce yourself and tell us where you're from and what you'd like to ask this gentleman here. Had his hand up first.
Peter Bozar, semi-retired advertising executive. Do you think there would be an opportunity to do a contemporary remake of The World of Suzu Wong that would capture the same spirit and emotion and integrity of the original?
Well, that's a difficult question for me to answer. I don't know. I mean, who knows? I really can't answer that. I hope so. But Hong Kong's changed, and maybe it'll be another version of it.
The last time you were here, there was a ballet version.
Yes, they had a ballet. That's what we, when we came to shoot the documentary, we were invited, I was invited to attend the first performance, I think, of the Hong Kong Ballet Company doing The World of Suzu Wong.
Anybody else? There's a man over here on the left side here.
I'm Alan Olson. I'm a member of the FCC. Why the doco? Why? And perhaps I'm asking the director,
yeah,
but
sure.
But why the doco?
Brian, you should answer that question.
Microphone down. Here. Microphone down the front to Brian. We're going to make the microphone folks really run tonight.
Well, hello. Yeah, I think I. I'll step back to the weekend where we opened the film at the Cinequest San Jose Film Festival. I was standing on the stage with Nancy and looked out at the audience, and we had a near-capacity audience, and it was kind of interesting, the makeup and the mix of the demographic. Quite a few young people, but there are also a lot of 18-year-olds with grey hair sitting out there, and some of them on their own, you know. And I think I had said to the audience, I said, this film is for all you 18-year-old guys of a few years ago, because when I was 18, I went to see this film, The World of Suzu Wong, and I was a big fan of William Holden, and I didn't know about Nancy Kwan, and we all fell in love with this lady. And I had followed her career through Flower Drum Song, which I thought was a stunning musical, and the fact that they had an all-Asian cast for the very first time, because one of the problems that I'd had growing up watching films in New Zealand was that I'd see films like Love is a Many Splendid Thing, and I think, well, Jennifer Jones, she's not Asian or Eurasian, but yet, while she did a wonderful job, I thought, well, where are the Chinese actresses? So these things always kind of bothered me to some extent. I couldn't figure out why Caucasians had to play Asians or other nationalities. And so over the years, I was kind of intrigued with Nancy's career and where it went or where it didn't go, and about that Asian stereotypical struggle with Hollywood. And one of the things in looking back, and I've said to Nancy two or three times, is that when she stepped on the stage to, or sorry, onto the set to do The World of Susie Wong, she didn't know it at the time, but she was making history, because she was really the very first Eurasian or Asian actress to land a lead role in a major Hollywood film. Sure, there'd been supporting roles, France Nguyen in South Pacific, but I'm talking about a lead role for an Asian actress in a major Hollywood film. And I'll try not to go on too long, but another analogy to this was Bruce Lee, one of Nancy's colleagues in the business, conceived the project of Kung Fu. And when he took it to the studio, Warner Brothers, to try to get it off the ground, there was no way that they were going to cast a Chinese guy in an American television series, because they didn't figure that the American audience would buy a Chinese guy playing a Chinese. So what do? They get a Caucasian actor, David Carradine, and make him look Chinese. And I thought this was kind of nuts myself, even though David Carradine did a great job, and I think, certainly it's a wonderful part of his legacy. But these were the things that kind of bothered me, and, I've always felt that regardless of what our nationalities are, doesn't matter where we come from, who we are, we're all the same. We really are all the same. And, I'd like to think that whilst, Asians are more readily accepted in American movies, I don't think it's as where it should be. I think it should be further down the road. But all of these things came together for me, and Nancy Kwan for me was the catalyst in all of this. And I don't know, it was something I've always wanted to do, was to tell her story. And I knew a little bit about the fact that she had an only son, and I knew about the relationship. And I don't know, it was a very human story, a wonderful story in a lot of ways, because it's not just about a wonderful actress who's really made her mark, but it's also about a mother, a human being, and everything that I've learned about Nancy in the 4 years since we started out doing this film is that she really is a wonderful human being, a very, very real person. Hollywood often used to put these people up on pedestals, and often it was very difficult for them to come down to reality, but not this lady. She is the same person I think she always was, as I think most of you know her in this room, especially right. My man Norbert here. I hope you'll all come along and see the film on Monday morning, because then you'll understand what I'm talking about, because it's more than just the life of a wonderful actress and a very gifted person, but also a wonderful human being. And I hope you'll come along and see it. So
thanks, Brian.
Hope that answers it.
Thank you. I'm going to call on my colleague Tom Easton in a second, but I just want to follow up on that one thing. You narrated a documentary some years ago about... The microphone's not really working here. Is it now? Okay. About Anna May Wong, who was one of the original silent film Chinese mm-hmm. stars. And then you've watched the progression of Asian actors and actresses in Hollywood. How would you say the status of Asian American and Asian actors in Hollywood is today? We've got Lucy Liu, but I mean, are Asians making an impact in Hollywood?
Well, it's gotten a little better, but I think it's still way off that Asian actors are not getting, I don't mean supporting roles, but real starring roles, main roles that they can in order to sustain a career. It's not there. A few years ago, the African American, now it's changed a lot. They're getting great roles. They're on television all the time. The Hispanics are coming up, but I think the Asians and the American Indian, or Native Americans, are still having a tough time getting good roles. We're still far off the mark.
Tom, you said?
Yeah, I was just curious, how did they find this?
Yeah, I turned it on. Can you hear me now? I was just curious how they found this young girl at the Marinelle Convent School, you know, convent school to play Susie Wong. That was my first question. And my second one was, you know, there are many, many movies made every year, and there are many, many movies forgotten even before they hit the screen. And I was wondering at what point you knew, if at all, while you were working on this movie, that you were working on something that was truly iconic, that you had an iconic role, and that you were, you know, that this was something that was very, very large.
The latter question. I had no idea, actually. When I first started in the world of Susie Wong, well, let's go back. I mean, how I got the role. I was home from England. I wanted to be a ballet dancer. I was at the Royal Ballet, and I was home for the holidays to Hong Kong. And I went up to the studio to see my favorite Chinese actresses testing for the role, the world of Susie Wong. Because Ray Stout was on a tour, a publicity tour, to drum up support and publicity for for Paramount Pictures about to make this film called The World of Susie Wong. And I was just standing around there, and this Ray Stout comes up to me and says, "Would you like to do a screen test?" And I said, "What? What? What's that?" And he said, "Well, you know, a screen test." I said, "Well, I don't know." And he says, "Well, just sit in the chair," and they put the camera on me and asked me a few questions, and we chatted for a while. I giggled all the way through the whole thing. I mean, I thought it was ridiculous. And then, just before the end of the summer, I was about to go back to school, and my father receives this letter from Ray Stark, who was with Seven Arts, the company at that time. He said, "Would I like to come to Hollywood?" They were going to put me under contract for 6 months to do another screen test, to study acting with a very well-known teacher there, an acting coach, and to do another screen test again. So I said, "Sure, I'll go to Hollywood. I've never been to America." So that's how I got involved. But then, originally I did not get the role. France Nguyen got the role because she was doing the Broadway play. And so Ray said, "Well, even though we like your screen test, we think she has more experience. She's been doing the play." And he said, if you really want to stick with acting, or you find what I suggest, that you go into the production of Susie Wong that was about to go on the road, meaning they were about to tour America and doing the play. So, and he said, "Then you can find out whether you want to become an actress or ballet dancer." So I thought, okay. I said, "This is a good way to see America and to see whether I really would like enjoy being an actress." So I joined the production, the Susie Wong road production. And when we got to Toronto, that was a few months later, I get this call from Ray Stark, and he said, "Now I want you to come to England and do a screen test for Susie Wong." I said, "Don't be so ridiculous." I said, "You know, you've been shooting for 2 months already in Hong Kong." I think by that time, they already shot the Hong Kong location, and they were back in England to do the interiors. And he said, no, you have to come over and do a screen test." So I said, "Sure. And who would I be doing the screen test with?" And they said, "Well, William Holden." So I got on the plane, and I flew to England, and I did do a screen test. But I think they used that scene, actually, for the movie, because I was working on the film the following day. It was two days later.
So what happened to the original actress?
Well, she got ill, so she was replaced. And they also, Ray Stout also replaced the director. And at that time, I don't want to mention the director's name. He was a very well-known director. But I think Ray felt that the film wasn't going in the direction that he wanted or the concept that he wanted. So that was his first film as producer. So he replaced the actress and the director.
The second question was, at what point, if at any, did you know that you were involved in something that would be so iconic?
Well, when I started shooting, I really didn't even know what I was doing. I mean, it was my first film, and because of Bill Holden and Dick Quine, the director, they got me through it. And no, I had no idea. I mean, for me, it was a job and fun at the time, going to Hong Kong, shooting in Hong Kong, and charming Hong Kong. And no, I had no idea whatsoever.
Because it's Hong Kong, I feel I have to ask you, because it's probably pretty funny. How much did you get paid for this first role that you...
Bad. Just because it's Hong Kong, money. Enough to live on, you know, to support myself. I was under contract, though, see, remember? So I guess it was okay those days.
Studio contract.
Studio for Ray Stark, yeah.
Ray
Stark. Contract. I mean, and then they used to, you know, when you're under contract, and they used to try to put me in films that I didn't really want to be in. And so I would get suspended. I would run off somewhere, disappear. And then they would suspend me for and not pay me. So then eventually they'll lure me back and say, look, we've got another movie for you. And so you better come back to work. And by that time, I was almost broke. So I thought, okay, I better go back to work.
And how did your family react to the girl who wanted to be a nun playing a prostitute in her first movie?
Oh, you have to ask my father that, but he's no longer around. And I think in the beginning, well, when they called my father Mr. Wong, that really pissed him off. I mean, he said, well, forget about show business for my daughter. But no, I mean, he accepted it because I was happy doing what I wanted to do, and I was happy doing it, so he accepted it. He really had no choice by then.
Let's take a few more questions if we have some from, yes, Terry.
Hi, my name's Edith Terry. I have to ask the obligatory feminist question. You helped to break a stereotype in terms of being an Asian American actress playing an actual Asian role. But at the same time, you helped to create a stereotype of the, you know, sort of cute Asian woman, in this case, a prostitute, a sex toy, essentially. And I wonder if at some point in your career or your life, did that begin to worry you? Or did you just feel that, well, this was a great role, it made my career, I'm happy about it. There's nothing to regret.
I get asked that question very often. As a matter of fact, just a few hours ago. And sex toy, I like that. I'm an actor, so if it's a good role, I would like to play it. Especially an Asian actor, that you don't get the opportunity to play good, meaty roles. So I look at it that way first. I mean, as for stereotype, I mean, you can have De Niro playing in Godfather or something, that's a stereotype. It goes on. I don't think about it, but as an actor, I look at the role and I do the best I can. If Asian women have problems with, I don't know who created that, because because I was playing a prostitute and that would give a bad impression. I mean, she could have been a nun. I could have played my first role as a nun and then I would be a saint by now, but you know, it didn't happen that way. So no, I mean, it's for me, I look at it as I'm an actor and I go for the roles, and I'm sorry if they think that way.
Yes, this gentleman right here.
Nancy, I wonder if you could put into context for us, if you like, your childhood, the way that you were living just before including the time when you were actually picked for that first screen test. What was it like to live in Hong Kong in those days as a Eurasian?
Why did you say as a Eurasian?
Well, because my kids are Eurasian, mm-hmm. and I think that Eurasian society now is very different from being a Eurasian then, because now they're welcomed by both sides. The impression I have, and I may be wrong, is that Eurasians were neither Chinese, they were Western. And I'd just like to hear your perspective as someone who was there, so to speak.
You have to tell your
children that, I mean, for myself, I come from two cultures. I'm very lucky I come from two cultures because I can draw from the two cultures. It has helped me in my life. And so I always looked at being a Eurasian as an advantage more than at a disadvantage. But rightly so in the days, but I went to Maryknoll, and in Maryknoll Convent School, there were a lot of Eurasian, Portuguese, Eurasians, foreigners, Americans, and then Chinese. So, and yes, I mean, I used to get, half-caste, or I don't know, you know, all those name-calling and things like that. But I always felt, even when I was young, that I have an advantage. I always felt that I had an advantage over other people because I come from two cultures. And so you have to tell your children that, too.
I think there's somebody over here. If you'll wait for the microphone. Here we go.
You could share with us some of your memories of the school when you were there. And second question is, were you in Hong Kong during the war years? And can you share with us some of your experiences then?
The war years, it's in the documentary. You have to come and see the documentary. I'll answer that. Because I was just born, you know, during the Second World War. And in the document, my father worked for the British intelligence. You know, he just come back from England, and he was married to this English woman, and that was a difficult time for a mixed marriage in Hong Kong. It was not acceptable, or quite as not acceptable, actually. And I come from quite a traditional Chinese family. And my father was, he worked for the British intelligence, so when my brother was like 2 years older, he had to smuggle us out of Hong Kong. And he himself had to get out of Hong Kong. And then during the war years, he used to pick up American servicemen that were shot down over China and take them back to Kunming, where the Flying Tigers were based. But we survived it. I mean, I...
So the first part was, any memories of the school?
Yeah. There was a nun at Maryknoll, Sister Matthew Marie. Oh, I love Sister Matthew Marie. I sucked up to Sister Matthew Marie, and she gave me all the cookies and everything else. And I was quite naughty, actually. I used to sneak up on them. And there was a swimming pool in Maryknoll, and to see what they were wearing when they went swimming. Because they had habits, you know, the nuns wore habits. And I said, I got to find out, what do they wear when they swim? So one day, a friend and I, we sneaked up there and saw these nuns. No, they had a little short habit. I don't know what. Or they covered their hair, and they had these black, like, I don't know. It's not like pajamas. I mean, they were quite, you know, they were very clad. You know, nothing, no swimming costume or bikinis or anything. But I enjoy Maryknoll very much, and I think Maryknoll girls are very loyal. They have reunions every year. My sister's forever attending every reunion all around the world. And I think they just had one here about a few weeks ago. Yeah?
How about this lady here and this gentleman on the opposite side next? Yeah. Okay, right here. Yep.
Hello. Yes, my name's Lynn Grabstad. I've been in Hong Kong for many years. I just wonder, it's 50 years almost since those two films, Love is a Man Who Splendid Thing, The World of Susie Wong, were made. Do you find it's amazing that nothing's sort of ever been made over the last 50 years which has really sort of captured Hong Kong, like those two movies? That's my first question. The second one is, your famous line is, for goodness sake. Was that actually in the script of the movie, or did you just ad-lib that?
That was in the script. And there's been other films made in Hong Kong since Susie Wong and Flower Drum Song. I'm just trying to think. What? Are there?
Nothing really set in Hong Kong.
No?
Like those two films.
I can't think of, actually. I'm trying.
It is. It's hard to think of films that sort of left the impression of Hong Kong the way those early films did.
Yeah, I mean, Susie Wong happened, it just came together because Bill Hoon was a huge star in those days. And
And the film, the bottom line was the film made a lot of money, so it was very successful. And so maybe that's why too. Actually, on my website, still, I mean, when I get letters from on my website, they always mention The Royal Suzy Wong and Flower Drum Song. I mean, I've done more than 50 other films and television shows and everything else. Nobody talks, well, very seldom, but always Suzy Wong and Flower Drum Song.
Right here.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
I wanted to ask, actually, next week is Hong Kong Film Art. I wanted to know what you're going to do after this documentary, what your plans are, and have you ever thought about, maybe you have come back to Hong Kong and thinking about working with creative people, directors, producers, do you see any barriers here for artists and creators in film that are different from the US? And how can Asian artists overcome that?
Well, that's a tough question, the second one, but you should know. I mean, you work in Hong Kong more than I do. I haven't worked in a film, especially in a local film, years. And so I'm not sure about the barriers here. I'm sure, like everywhere else, you know. I was just talking to someone earlier, a reporter, and she tells me that it's very macho, the film business here. I mean, you hear about the male stars. You see, in America, just recently when we were in San Jose, we had a Q&A question, and someone asked me in the audience, they said, well, what about Asian American actors working in films? They don't get the roles. I mean, they're worse off than the actresses. And he's right. You know, they do not write for... I mean, it's much more difficult for an Asian-American actor to get roles than an actress. And here, you have the Jackie Chans, and you have, you know, Bruce Lee, Jet Li, and all that. So she was just saying, because now, this film festival that's coming up, there are three women directors in the festival. I think opening night and closing night, so she's very happy about that. And as for myself, I work on screenplays a lot, and we do a lot of independent productions. And so we have, we're working on a screenplay for Singapore, shooting in Singapore with a talented young director. And we wrote the script together, and it's about feng shui and ghost and things like that. Very, I guess, popular subject in Southeast Asia. So, I would love to work in Hong Kong if the right opportunity came up.
Do I see some other hands going up? I want to make sure I don't miss anybody. Right here in the front.
I was very interested hearing your memories of childhood in Hum On Tin. Mm. I love hearing stories about old Hong Kong and especially the rural area. So question one, I'd like to hear more about your memories of what was that part of Hong Kong, what was Hong Kong like those years ago? Second, we recently saw you play Ruby Chow in the Jason Scott Lee, the Bruce Lee biopic. And Brian here described you as a contemporary colleague of Bruce Lee. So yeah. Question is, were you ever acquainted? And if so, what are your memories of the man?
Bruce and I were pretty good friends, yeah. I'm not good friends. He went to he went to Lhasa and we went to Marino. But I met Bruce actually in Los Angeles. I was working on a film with Dean Martin called The Wrecking Crew. And Bruce was our stunt coordinator because we had to do some martial arts fighting. So that's how I met him. And at that time, he told me, he said, you know, Nancy, he says, I can't get work here. He says, I'm going to go back to Hong Kong, and I'm going to become a big martial arts star. I said, well, good for you, Bruce. And he did come back to Hong Kong, and he became a huge star. Unfortunately, I felt very sad because I think he passed away much too young, and he didn't have a chance to enjoy his fame. And you know, all the good things, the perks that comes with it. He he loved life. I mean, it's a very unfortunate thing. I remember one, because Brian talked about the Kung Fu episode, the TV series. We were in Hong Kong, and Bruce comes to me one day, and he says, Nancy, he says, I'm going to do this TV show, American TV show called Kung Fu. So I go, I don't know, Bruce. I said, I don't know if they're ready for that. Oh, yes. He said, you want to bet $10? So, okay, let's take a bet. I didn't get to collect. He didn't get the role, and he passed away, you know, unfortunately. But I liked Bruce a lot. And I enjoyed, I mean, Hong Kong, I have beautiful memories of my childhood in Hong Kong as I, you know, just read a little bit of it, parts of it. We could roam the streets freely, and it was a whole, it's a whole different life. But, you know, everything, I mean, we all go through changes, and that's how it should be. So, except Hong Kong changed much too quickly, every other day.
We have time for maybe one or two more questions.
One or two more questions if we have anybody out there. Oh, actually, there are two over here on the side. I apologize if I neglect this wing of the room.
Martin Mertz, just a quick question. Did you read the novel before you played the film?
You mean, did I read the novel Suzy Wong? It's very strange. I was visiting my grandmother in England, and, Worthing. She lived in Worthing. And I was in passing this bookstore, and I see the display of The World of Suzy Wong, the book. And it stopped me because it was about Hong Kong and this intriguing woman, Cheung Sa-mon. So, but I didn't buy the book. I never read the book. No, I didn't read it. No. No, just the script.
You've so, never read the book?
Never read the book.
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Robert Gibson. I'm a beneficiary of Mary Noller in that I'm married to a Mary Noller. And I think it's a remarkable school because of the very remarkable nuns who taught there. They seem to have been extremely avant-garde, very forward-thinking. And a couple of stories I've heard. Well, one was that it was a Japanese hospital during the Second World War. And after the Second World War, the nuns came back. And the Americans wanted to, or the British wanted to continue to use it as a hospital for a while. But after a few rounds with the nuns, they said they'd rather fight the Japanese than those nuns. They let them have the school back. But I was just wondering, I think there's a tremendous story to be told there. And I was wondering whether maybe one day you could play the role of a nun.
I love that. That'll make up for the prostitute part, you know, so.
All right, last chance for someone to ask Nancy Kwan a question. Yes, this young lady right here.
Hello? Miss Nancy Kwan, it is a delightful experience to see you in person. I remember being very young and dragged to see The World of Suzy Wong. I didn't know what a prostitute was, but I remember how beautiful you were. But I'd like you to know this. When I came in at 6 o'clock, to get ready to come up to hear you. I was early, so I went to the bar and I asked for a Diet Coke. And the barman, James, he said, oh, you wanted a Diet Coke? I said, well, can I take this upstairs? Are you going to see Nancy Kwan? I said, yes. She was gorgeous. This is James downstairs. And he was 17. When you made the film, The World of Suzy Wong, and he said this in Cantonese, 同威廉·何頓，荷里活最大的明星，我哋香港靚到我哋暈曬浪。This is James at 6 o'clock. All right, he said that to me. And I said, why don't you sneak up and meet her? Well, I have to be on duty at the bar. I said, try to get away. She'll be upstairs. So I want you to know this. And I said, how old were you then? I was 17, he said. So he remembers you. So I and him remember the time when you were famous and brought Hong Kong name to the world. And thank you very much for doing that.
Thank you. Mgoi sai.
Well, as we can see tonight, Nancy Kwan is still very much famous and still as beautiful as ever. I still have my
cover of Life magazine.
Are you going to embarrass the poor thing?
I don't want to neglect anybody. Are you okay for time? We'll have one more here. This gentleman here.
My name's Angus.
James is going to come up.
Is this on? Yeah. My name's Angus Forsyth. You never read Richard Mason's book. Did you ever meet him? That's first question. Second question, did you ever get an impression of how he felt about the way his book developed into this enormous legend, which is something you have dominated ever since?
First question, no, I never met him. And I don't know. Unfortunately, he was here, and then I heard he lived in Italy or Rome or somewhere. So no, I didn't get a chance. Unfortunately, I never met him. Oh,
James has come up from downstairs.
Hi, James. Hello, James.
James beat Nancy Kwan. See, Nancy Kwan has an influence on young men of all nationalities everywhere. Wow.
Okay.
You're all being very nice to James because he serves at the bar.
That's right.
He tailor drinks.
Doubles from now on. I think if we have any other questions, I'll take them. Otherwise, I think we'd like to give... Oh, one more. Oh, yes.
I have one question and one information. The question is a very simple biographical question is exactly what were the years you studied in Maryknoll Convent School? Because I'd like to bring it back to our alumni alumni gathering next time, and probably to try to identify your sister so that, you know, we can maybe have her on the stage and tell us something which we'd like to hear, which is different from what we hear now, some secrets, whatever, I don't know. The second is an information tell you that, I don't know whether you remember Simon Murray or not, but when I told him that I'm coming to this talk of yours, he wrote to me, he said, you should have seen her when she was starring in The World of Susie Wong. She drove us all to alcohol. That was what he said. So I'd like to bring this information to you, but I don't know whether you remember him or not. So what were the years that you studied in the
Since kindergarten.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. To when I was almost 13, then I went to school in England.
So until primary, the end of primary school.
Yeah, end of primary school.
And kindergarten at the time, there were males.
My brother actually, I think, he went there for a very short time. Uh-huh. Then later on, he went to diocesan, uh-huh, boys school.
So. That's wonderful. So I've had some good information to bring back to my alumni gathering next time.
Actually, I'm going to Maryknoll next week, giving a talk there.
That's brilliant. Sure. That's splendid. Thank you very much. We'll be so proud to have you there, I'm sure. Thank you.
Very popular school. A very popular student. All right, I think this has been one of the most enchanting evenings that I've had in a long time, and I'm sure you will agree. But just a reminder that the film, To Whom It May Concern, Kashen's Journey, is to be shown on Monday at the Theater One of the Hong Kong Convention Center in the morning, about 9:15, 9:30. Is that right, Brian? And you are welcome if you can get away from your workaday life on Monday morning. And I just a hearty thank you to Nancy Kwan. A real privilege to have you here at the FCC.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And I never have any idea what are in these packages, but but we never. Who knows? But
fleece jacket.
You sure will blow up.
A fleece jacket.
Okay. In any event,
nice.
A token of our appreciation, Nancy.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming tonight. Just one program note. We do everything here at the FCC, and for those of you who are concerned about the United States dollar
renminbi exchange rate and all kinds of financial issues. On Tuesday, lunchtime, we have Ambassador David Mulford, a former undersecretary at the Treasury Department, former ambassador to India from the United States, coming here to the FCC, among many other events. So I hope you'll be back very soon. And thank you all for an evening at the FCC.
Good stuff.
Yeah, it's fun.